Hare Krishna. So I have the great privilege of introducing our most prestigious speaker for today, His Holiness Bhakti Vasudev Swami. Viva! Bhakti Vasudev Maharaj was introduced to Krishna consciousness in Nigeria in December 1983. He joined as a brahmachari in 1984 and accepted initiation from His Holiness Bhakti Tirth Maharaj in 1985. He was awarded sannyas on 26th February this year by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami Maharaj in Mayapur. So during his preaching for more than 16 years in Africa, he served in various capacities as temple president for temples in South Africa and Nigeria, as regional secretary and BBT representative for West Africa. He holds a master's degree in philosophy and education and is a scholar in comparative politics and has published more than 30 papers in 3 years on Vaishnava social political dynamics while preaching in universities and academic circles. Inspired by his successful preaching in academic circles, His Holiness Bhakti Tirth Swami instructed him to pursue a PhD in studies for which he is hoping to find some time. So, over the last few months, he has made presentations at religious conferences in Mayapur, the 9th Summit for Chief Justice of the World. Also, since the last 5 years, he has been preaching from New Jersey, US, and before departing for preaching engagements in Nigeria, he has come to our temple to give us his valuable association. So, let us welcome His Holiness Bhakti Vasudev Maharaj to Shishi Radha Gopinath Mandir in our traditional style by loudly chanting.
I feel very opportune to be here because all over the world we've been hearing about Chopati Temple and the wonderful devotees here. So when I was in Mayapur, actually I flew into Calcutta on the 5th of November last year. I came into India actually for, you know, for my own selfish motive, in quote. I came in to run some programs, in my preaching programs, in the universities. So I came in for 3 major conferences. First, I was originally scheduled to deliver a talk at the 9th Summit of the Chief Justices of the World Conference at Lucknow. That conference was in December, middle of December. But when I came into Mayapur, there was some ongoing, some schedule, a program that was to take place in a few days. That was the United Religions Initiative Conference. That was an international gathering of scholars and religious leaders from all over the world. So the devotees in Mayapur requested me that, oh, Vasudev, you're here, so better go and jeer up these professors and religious leaders who came. So I went in there, and it was a fabulous meeting. I think that was one of the most successful outreach preaching programs that ISKCON has hosted, because every religious leader who came to that conference, they went home with a different attitude, a positive attitude about the Hare Krishnas. In fact, I remember one professor, he told me, he's a young professor from Nigeria, and this professor, he told me, that I just called my wife, you know. And so I told her that, see, we are right here in the Hare Krishna land, their headquarters in India, and we eat with them, we sleep with them, we sing with them, we drink with them. So the wife was shocked, because he's coming from a religious background, which is completely anti-Krishna consciousness. In Nigeria specifically, the other religions, they're very much against anything outside of Christianity. And, of course, the Muslims, they are not very much against anything outside of Islam. But the Christians are very anti-Krishna conscious. So this gentle professor, he told me that he called his wife, and his wife was shocked. And what happened that he was able to convince the wife that these people, What we see with them is not the way we perceive them out there. That they are real loving people. So in that way, he was doing the preaching on our behalf. And a number of other professors who even came from Africa, I had the chance of interacting with them. And they all went home with a wonderful impression about the Hare Krishna. Indeed, the devotees did an amazing thing there, that they gave each and every conference attendee a set of Prabhupada's books, Bhagavad Gita and some other books. So they all went home with a package of Krishna consciousness. So that was very marvelous arrangement that was done by the Mayapur management. So after that, I went on to Lucknow for the 9th summit of the Chief Justice of the World Conference. I'm just trying to break down the whole thing because also His Holiness Gopal Krishna Maharaj actually gave me an instruction when I was in Delhi. He said, Vasudev, anywhere you go, please tell the devotees about what type of preaching you are doing. Because sometimes the devotees don't know the type of preaching that we are doing, the different devotees are doing in ISKCON, and sometimes we tend to think, oh, there's nothing happening in this movement, I'm just sitting down here wasting my time. He said, so if you tell the devotees, when they understand what type of preaching is going on, some devotees will be enthused. So that is why I'm actually taking the time off to be able to give some rudiment about these programs. Otherwise, there is no need, because whatever services that we do is up to Krishna and our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, to benedict us. But again, we are a society that is based on caring and sharing. So I'm trying to share these little experiences with the devotees. And so when I went to Lucknow to present the paper at the 9th summit of the Chief Justice of the World Conference, I was invited. You know, I was coming from U.S. So when I went there, they provided me with an accommodation, because I earlier complained to them that, look, I'm a brahmachari, I don't have any money, so I may not come to your conference. So they said, no, we'll provide accommodation for you, we'll provide feeding for you. So I said, you provide feeding, I'm a vegetarian. I said, I'm not only a vegetarian, I'm a Krishnatarian. So you can't really, you can't really take care of me, you know. Anyway, so they said, this professor pleading that I should come. Anyway, so I went. And I was allotted an apartment there with one other professor from U.S., because they merged the professors from different countries. So when I went in, and I was carrying three shilas, two Granishima shilas and one Pralanishima shila. So when I went to the room, I was the first person to be in the room, and I was just praying to Granishima that, please, this other professor should not come and share the room with you so that you can be properly worshipped here. Otherwise, I'll just box you up until I leave here. So anyway, as Krishna never fails his devotee, that professor didn't come, so I just set up my grand receiver. So I just set them up, and that was an amazing experience. So when it was at the conference sessions, I was drafted to a particular session where one other professor from Delhi, a doctor from the medical field, he was also on our panel. And what happens is that, you know, after my presentation, there were some other professors, some Caucasians from West Virginia in the U.S. He was criticizing the U.S. government like anything, but he's a white guy. So I was also wondering, why is he acting like that? But this is the nature of the professors. We like to criticize people, although we are put in the same position, we'll do worse because we don't have control of the senses. Anyway, so when I presented my paper, and I mentioned these things, I was referring to the other professor's paper that, you see, we know ourselves, we're professors, and then, you know, we like to criticize the politicians. But actually, I have seen in my own experience that politicians put us in some positions, and we failed woefully more than they, the politicians, because we are also the same thing. We don't have any control. So I mentioned that Indians are actually going to the West to bring all these professors to proffer solutions to the world about peace. But the whole solutions of about the world problems are right sitting right here in India. So I gave the example of the deer, the mosque deer, who runs all over the desert. The mosque deer is perceiving some scent, very powerful, attractive scent, stimulating scent, but the scent is from his body. And the mosque deer thinks his scent is coming from a very far distance, and so she starts running until she gets dehydrated and dies. So I give that example, and believe it or not, the Indian professors, they were very much appreciative. And the other professor who was criticizing the U.S. government, I mentioned one thing about what generally we do in academics, and he said, I remember his remark, he said, Das, because even in academics, incidentally, my comic name is Vasudev Das, and that goes everywhere. So sometimes people hear of the name, and then they see me, they hear my accent, it's a different guy, the name is a different thing, the color is a different thing, the accent is different. So this professor, he was saying that, what you said about control of the senses is very correct. Because I pointed out to him that we can criticize people, we are put in that position. If we don't have control over the senses, I mentioned about Rupa Goswami, we would still fail the masses. So what does this mean to us, even as devotees? What does it mean to us? It means that we are all supposed to be leaders. Whether you are a woman, you are a man, you are a young man, it doesn't matter. In fact, if you are a teacher, if you are a mother, if you are a father, if you are a worshipful demigod, I think most of us here are not worshipful demigods. I know I'm not a worshipful demigod. Maybe some of you are worshipful demigods. But if you are a worshipful demigod, also you are supposed to be a leader. And majority of us here are going to be fathers. Or we are mothers already, or we are fathers already. So we are supposed to be leaders. And a leader inspires the people. A leader does not simply command respect. I mean, does not actually command people. He inspires the people, and by that, he commands respect. And so, we as devotees in Krishna Consciousness Movement, if we understand the principle that, that Rupa Goswami gave in the very first verse of the Upadesamrita, which I was using that as a core concept in trying to drag home my point in the conference, then we also can embrace Rupa Goswami's assertions that if we really want to position ourselves as exemplary leaders, we have to learn to be able to control our senses. Otherwise, we may have very good intentions. And those good intentions are not backed by the ability to control the senses, we will fail the masses, we will fail the people. Our society is supposed to be producing brahmanas who will actually pilot the affairs of leadership tomorrow. Therefore, if we practice this Krishna consciousness properly, if we imbibe the culture of Krishna consciousness to the fullest of our good intention, then we will be able to spread that energy to others. And it will not be difficult for people to emulate us and even people to follow us to the temple. So, when we left Lucknow, I went to Calcutta for another conference, and that was a conference on self-identity and culture. East meets West, and that was in January 6-9. And I went, keep in mind that I went to all of these programs purely on Vaishnava dress. In the West, normally, my Guru Maharaj told me to disguise myself because of an incident that happened in North Carolina when I went to the North Carolina Political Science Association. One professor accused me that I am, I can't remember the words he used. But in other words, he was saying that I'm like a spiritual radical who is just in the academics to try to change to change issues and change people and change the world. So when my Guru Maharaj, when I gave him that information, he told me that each time I'm going to the conferences in the West, I should dress like one of them so that they are free to actually, you know, come close. Yeah, I remember that professor told me. I went for this North Carolina Political Science Association conference. After presenting my paper, because I dressed very simple. Although I put on a pants, but I put on some simple dress. And it was a winter, spring. So I put on one of these jackets, Ratha Yatra jacket, Prabhupada's jacket. So I was just simple. And when I presented my paper there, you know, one of the professor who was the chairman of the panel, who is a prolific writer and a very renowned public figure in that state, he told me that Vasudev, he said, you are a revolutionary. He said, you know why you're a revolutionary? He said, you dress very simple. Look, every other professor who comes here, they dress in three-piece suit. They carry a big suitcase. And you dress very simple. And he said, but your paper is heavily loaded. So when I told my Guru Maharaj that, he said, no, I should never go simple any other time. I should dress like one of them. But when I came to India, I was carrying my suits and everything, but There is one of my friends, one professor, is a disciple of His Holiness Rana Maharaj. She is from Nasik. And so I had requested her that I want to see her child and her husband. So she actually brought her husband and her child to South India when we're having this international conference on organizational leadership. So the husband told me that, no, this is India. Be on a version of dress. Forget about what is happening in the West. Be on a version of dress that it will impress people more. So I bought that idea. So all of the conference I went in India, actually, I went purely on a version of dress. And it was very stimulating for Indian professors and even for the Westerners. I mean, they could see this is a black guy and he's piloting an Indian culture and he's a scholar. And so it was very enticing to them. So at Calcutta, what happened? I had told the professors who are arranging that conference that, see, I'm a wretched brahmachari. I can't come to your conference and stay in your hotels. I don't have the money. So you either want, if you want me to come, I will come only on the day that I'm going to present my paper. Is it okay with you? The person who is organizing, who was organizing that conference, the husband and wife, they are of Indian background. And so when I told them that, they said, okay, that's no problem. We understand your situation. We could have helped you, but we also don't have money. as you know, professors normally, they are poor people. They have a big name, they have big PhDs, but you know the businessman on the street in some cases has money more than them. So when I went to that conference, one white Caucasian, he approached me, and then he said, because I put on the white Vaishnava dress, so he said, are you a professor or are you a doctoral student? You know, for you to ask a professor that type of question is insulting. And although I'm putting on a Vaishnava dress, our false ego is always still there as scholars. So then I kept quiet. Then I turned on to him. Then I didn't answer him. I just told him, I am a priest. So he was dumbfounded because that was not the answer he expected. I just told him, I'm a priest. And I pointed to myself, I'm a priest. So he just looked at me and then left. Anyway, when we finished that program, there were some Indian body professors who were very much appreciative. And some other professors who were there during my presentation, they became very much curious about the Bhagavad Gita. Because what I do is, I talk with them. I'm saying this because there are a number of devotees who are coming from a staunch academic background, so that we could also stimulate some of you who have to figure out in the future how to utilize your skills in reaching out, you know, this higher caliber of people in society. It is very simple. It's a matter of really determining and being plugged into it. So, because my works are purely from, I present my works from the Vaishnava perspective. Whatever social, political, economic problem, I always present my paper from the Vaishnava perspective. In other words, I present what Prabhupada proffers to those type of solutions. But because it's a scholarship, you have to be able to know what they know and what the Vedic literature actually stipulates. And when I present my work, it stimulated a lot of the scholars, and they were asking about Bhagavad Gita because I quoted, you know, directly from Bhagavad Gita, even the Sanskrit verses. So they became stimulated, and they wanted to know more about the Bhagavad Gita. Incidentally, the chairman of my panel, he is a disciple of Prabhupada. He's a professor, a disciple of Prabhupada. In fact, when the organizers of the conference introduced me to him, immediately he asked me, are you a devotee of ISKCON? I said, yes. He said, who is the Guru Maharaj? I told him, it's Bhaktisiddhanta Swami. He said, oh, he's my friend. I mean, we used to be in Holland preaching books, distributing Prabhupada's books. So I was shocked. Then I said, so are you a disciple of Prabhupada? He said, yes. So he was the chairman of the panel. So like the whole panel, we took over because after presenting my work, and after presenting my work, the scholars, they were a little bit dumbfounded. So he stimulated everyone by asking some questions. And they didn't know that they are the same family. This chairman and then the presenter, they are all of the same family. So, so he asked some questions to stimulate the audience. And then they followed up and they started asking. And they were all centering their questions on the Bhagavad Gita. So I took the time to explain to them how there are different versions of Bhagavad Gita. They should be careful. There is impersonal aspect. Personal aspect, I recommend that they read Bhagavad Gita by A.C. Bhaktivedanta, Bhagavad Gita as it is. Anyway, when we finished that conference in Calcutta, which paper was very, very much highly embraced, I went on to University of Pondicherry in South India to present another paper at an organizational conference on organizational leadership. And that program was also very stimulating. In fact, the devotee, the other professor who came from Nasik, and her husband, I remember the remark of the husband, because the husband was not there when I presented my paper. And so when he came in, the wife told him, the professor told him that this is what Vasudev presented. So he was asking me that, I missed a Bhagavatam class. I said, this is a conference hall. We're not talking about Bhagavatam class here. He said, no. That his wife told him that I just gave Bhagavatam class there. I said, well, that might be true, because what we are doing is to be able to preach, but because these people are dumb-headed, so we have to talk while they talk and then bring in also the Puranic version. So anyway, that program got over, and I'm on my way out. I spoke with His Holiness Randa Maharaj that, and he wanted me to visit here before leaving. He was even thinking I'm going back to the U.S. But incidentally, I'm going to Africa from here, and I have some conference in Israel in May. Hopefully that I'm able to go. Again, everything is conditional in terms of my type of preaching programs, because as a wretched brahmachari, I got no money, and except some friends come to aid me, I don't go anywhere. So that is, in a nutshell, what basically we did in India. And on our way out, we wanted to come to take the blessings of all the Chopati devotees. I've been to some other places, Nasik, Pune, Pandapur. I was also to go to Belgaum, but then I ran out of time because I'm leaving tomorrow to the airport, so I had to rush back. So I really wanted to come and take all of your blessings. I'm trying to be a soldier for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But, you know, to be a soldier is not a very good job. But it is a good job for Lord Chaitanya. But it is risky. It is difficult. And therefore, every time you have to be able to see that if your bullets are getting finished, you get some reinforcement. You run back home, get some bullets. And then you eat properly also. And then you get some proper armor dress to be able to protect yourself. Our process is that of getting association from the sadhus, from all of you. And that's why I actually have come here. It doesn't matter whether you're a woman, you're a man, you're a child, you're an old man, you're all sadhus, and I really come to take your blessings. If you can't really openly give me your blessings, at least you should pray from within your heart that, oh, may this little soldier of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, may he go to the war front and come back again to meet us. So that is why I actually come here. Now, I want to also mention some few things to be able to encourage us, because I think that majority of the people here are from Indian background. Now, the wealth that is within the Indian tradition is unprecedented. You can't really figure, you can't measure the breadth and length. It's like a construct. A construct, we have a concept and we have a construct. A concept, you can measure the length and breadth. A construct, you can't measure the length and breadth. You're like learning. You can't measure the length and breadth of learning. And so it's a construct. But you can figure out the degree of one's learning. Now, India is blessed with so much of profound potentials. And I remember at Nasik, I gave a class last Sunday, and somebody also was making some inquiry that he said he's having difficulties. I don't know where the time is, but I'm conscious of time so that I can know precisely how far we are going. What time are we? Where is Hare Krishna Prabhu? What time are we supposed to finish? 2:30? Okay, so I still have plenty of time. because I remember when I was in Delhi, I went with devotees on Harinam, and then we went to some, I can't remember the name of the hall, but it's a big hall, and then, you know, so many people, hundreds and hundreds of people were just following us for the Harinam until we went to that hall. And the whole hall was fully loaded with people. In fact, you can't even throw a pin and it gets down. And then the devotee said, Maharaj, you have to help us to speak for a limited time. I said, how much time? He said, maybe 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 10 minutes. I said, all right, I take 5 minutes. I speak for 5 minutes. They said, but that might be too short. I said, don't worry. I have some good background of scholarship, and we can load so many things together and give out the team in a dose. So 20 minutes is more than enough here. And so we are saying that India is blessed with so much of resources. And I was mentioning at Nasik, someone was asking me a question, was raising an issue that he has a problem in his devotional service. Apparently, he's a new devotee. He has a problem in his devotional service. And that problem is that his family members are not cooperating. So he thought that is a very big problem. And when he raised that issue, which I think some of us here, we might have similar problems. In the beginning, people are not very much appreciative of what we're doing. Family members, husband, wife, children, etc. So when he mentioned this, I told him that as far as I've seen in India, I've been to several places in India, to our temples and to secular India, and I don't see problems. Devotees don't have problems here in comparison to problems outside of India. So I told that devotee, in answering that his question, I mentioned that when I joined the temple, I have seen with my own eyes. This is not a Puranic story. I saw with my own eyes how someone, supposedly a parent, will openly, it not only abuse the child for trying to be a devotee, but he gets, or she gets soldiers, not police. Not, there's a difference between a soldier and a policeman. A policeman is not so brutal because of their training. Soldier is trained to be brutal. And a parent, I was explaining to him, I've seen a parent brings a group of soldiers to drag a devotee living in a temple out, and not only take him out, they had him emotionally abused. Not only emotionally abused, he was physically tortured, physical abuse. I don't think in India anything like that happens. No. So when he had this story, I said, it's not only one case, it's not only two cases, it's not only three cases. I have seen more than five cases when I joined in the temple where I was staying. Therefore, I asked him, so you think that just because your wife does not cooperate with you at this point in time, this early stage, you think that is a problem? Or maybe your brother is not very much favorable to you at this time, that's a problem? Look at the problem people are having outside of India. So after the class, he came to me and was very much appreciative of how he was born in India. And the problem, the so-called problem he's having, he began to see it as a non-problem. Why this story? All of us think that we have problems. I don't have sufficient money. I don't have sufficient time to perform a devotional service, or have these distractions here. My environment is not very conducive. But these are not problems. Some of us even, we have very good opportunity. Our husband or our wife, in short, our spouse is a very staunch devotee. We don't take advantage of it. Rather, we do all sort of things that will distract them. I give you a story of one Mataji who was called Durachara. I guess some of you know that story. It's a story from the Padma Purana. It's a Puranic story, but it's a real story. It happened in South India. And there was a Brahmin. His name was Duskriti. His name was Duskriti. And he had a wife. His wife's name, if I'm getting it correct, I think so. His wife's name was Durachar. And this Brahmin was a very staunch spiritualist, highly devoted to the Brahminical culture. But his wife, he was not interested in anything spiritual. She was completely opposed to this Brahmana's devotion. To the point that she was driven by lusty desires to do some hanky-panky games, some pranks, some mischievous pranks, driven by lust. So she went and built some hut far away, like in a forest, where she privately would meet with her paramours. And this is gross, completely gross, but it happened. And it's all geared towards frustrating the Brahmana. Sometimes we may not go to that gross level, but our duty is to see that we frustrate other devotees. Or we frustrate our spouse. Or we frustrate our father or our mother. Oh, he's going to this temple. He's going to this Hare Krishna temple. She's going to this Hare Krishna temple. I don't like this Hare Krishna temple because they talk so much. No sense gratification, no sense gratification, no sense gratification. So people don't like this idea of no sense gratification. Therefore, if we are preaching, we should not go out to tell people no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication, no this, no that. No, this is not how to preach. You simply distract people because in the beginning, it is very difficult to give up sinful activities. Therefore, we have to behave like Srila Prabhupada, who will lure the Americans by serving them, giving them gulab jamun. And even he didn't tell them anything about Chinese histories until the day they were to be initiated. And then, because they were already bought over, so they couldn't resist. They said, we'll take it anyway. But how many rounds? He said, 64. He said, that's too much. He said, all right, 32. He said, oh, that is still too much. Or 16, finished. That's the minimum I can go. So they accepted. Anyways, this Durachar, something happened in her life. One day, she was very much disturbed. She was looking for some sense gratification she couldn't get. So she went to that her hut in the forest. And she was just wailing and crying. And there was some tiger or some lion. This ferocious, I don't know one of them. Ferocious animal. The ferocious animal was just sleeping, resting peacefully. And her cries woke up that animal. And so the animal listened properly, and then the voice of a human being. So, you know, she started moving towards that direction. And then, you know, when animal is moving in the forest, you know, there are some noise from the leaves that you touch and all these things. So Durachar also was thinking that, oh, one of my lovers is coming. How wonderful. This night is a successful one. And so she was anticipating, and then the lion was moving forward. And then until they came to see face to face. And she couldn't believe her eyes. She was frightened. And so as the lion was getting close, she knew that her life was finished. And he ordered the lion, hey, wait a minute, don't kill me. I want to ask you a question first. So the lion stopped. You may wonder, how can someone talk to a lion and then the lion will stop? This is very impractical, right? But you know that in the earlier times, you know, there was a good communication between animals and humans. And you remember also in the case of Ram Leela, that Ram ordered Lakshman to go and check at the gate if there is someone who is there who needs his attention. And you remember the story of that Mr. Dog. If you read Ram Leela, if you read the Ramayana, you know that story. So the dog came into the courtroom, and they were communicating. Other Ram's ministers were there, and the dog was, you know, giving his own story. So this Mataji, he ordered the lion to stop and then answer her question. So the lion waited, and then she said, "Could you please you tell me why you want to kill me? Why you want to eat me?" So when she asked this question, you know what the lion did? He just burst into laughter and laughed seriously. Have you ever had a lion laugh? Have you ever been to the zoo? You see a lion laugh? Even the lions in the zoo, they don't laugh. But this lion was laughing. And so the lion explained to her that, "You see, I have taken a vow. Sometimes we think that we are the only people. We are brahmacharis. We are the only ones who take the vow. But it's not only brahmacharis who take vows. This lion also took a vow. And what is the vow of the lion? He said, I have a vow never to kill any sannyasi. Second, I will never kill a brahmana. And I will never, the last point is, I will never kill a chaste woman. A chaste woman, never in my life. Even if I'm so hungry, I will never try it." So, the lion told her, "But you know yourself. You are not a chaste woman. Therefore, you must be my lunch." When he said that, he just devoured this lady. So, the point is that we may have very good opportunity. This is a lady, her husband was a very staunch brahmana. And she just decided to be completely averse to Krishna consciousness. This was the reaction. But if you also go into the details of that story, there are other things that come along with that. Eventually, this lady, she was liberated because she had to take birth. After going through some purification, she was first sent to... when the lion devoured her, she was first sent to some hellish planet for 10 million kalpas. After that, she was again sent to Rarawa. You know, we have 28 types of hells. And then she stayed there for about 100 manvantaras. Just see, for someone not to be chaste, this is the punishment. And we may be laughing. We think it's only a prostitute. But even those of us who are devotees, supposedly devotees in ISKCON, and if we are not chaste to the mission of Prabhupada, we are not chaste to the Vaishnav system, we also will incur some horrible reactions. We may say, "Well, I'm a Vaishnav. I've chanted Hare Krishna, so there's no degradation." But we have also had stories how even a pujari took a lower bed because he was a kanista and it was very much offensive to other devotees. We have to be careful. This Krishna consciousness movement is like a knife, a double-sword knife that cuts this way and cuts this way also. It's like a razor blade. You can use a razor blade to have a clean shave for those people who are still shaving. I know that majority of our devotees, they don't shave anymore because it's like a burden, you know. So, Krishna consciousness is also like that. In fact, in most places outside of India, our temples have become easy access to hellish planet. Because people come to the temples to steal shoes. Sometimes they're not even devotees. But then they have some slogan that if you want some free shoe, go to the Hare Krishna temple. And you always get a free shoe there. So, the point is that this lady, she had very good opportunity. She never took advantage of it. So, she has to pass through some horrible situation. For those of us who have taken birth in India, have you wondered? Have you asked yourself, why did I take birth in India? Why not in Iraq? Why not in Macedonia? Or why not in the U.S.? Anyway, U.S., many people would like to take birth there because of the economic development. But it's not a place to go. It's not a place to even take birth because your next hellish existence is rest assured. I stayed there. And I can tell you vividly what is happening. So, and some people are very much eager. I remember in my post, one American devotee was telling me how Adam Vasi came to him and was saying, "I want to go to America. I want to go to America." So he said, "I am from America. I want to stay here, and you want to go to America. You see how the grass is always greener on the other side. We stay there. We don't get anything. And we are jealous of you who took birth in India, and you want to go to hellish planet." I remember the first time I went to U.S. because I went there for some conferences also. Then the devotees wanted me to stay to help more in the preaching there. The first time I went to meet my Guru Maharaj, you know what he told me? He said, "Oh, welcome to the hellish planet." This is somebody who was born, groomed, schooled on scholarship, and even up to all of the university program on scholarship. It's not someone who is abusing his country. He's telling you what the country is. Yet we are very much attracted. We want to go there for economic development. Now, to take birth in India, I'm saying that some of us do not know why we take birth in India and the importance of our birth. Majority of us have never cared, have never bothered to ask ourselves, why did I take birth in India? It is explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that those who have taken birth in India, they are special people. Human birth is a special birth, but especially to take birth in the land of Bharata, that is a very superlatively excellent special birth. Because all of the resources are available at your disposal. From childhood, your parents take you to holy places of pilgrimage. You know the pilgrimage places that parents take their children to in the West? It's beer palace. Gambling houses. I don't want to mention the state, but there's one state in the U.S. I went for a conference, and I vow never to go. Whatever conference, even they're going to sponsor my ticket, that I will never go to that place. If you disembark from the airplane, as you enter into the airport, just as you enter into the lounge of the airport, it's all casinos. Casinos, all is loaded all over the place. Those of you who have been to the U.S., you must have heard about that state. Yeah. It's loaded. As you enter, you can just feel the sinful vibration. We say no gambling, but their slogan here is gambling, 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 gambling. That is how the state generate their income from gambling, gambling houses. What situation is more hellish than that? One, as we went to the hotel where we were to lodge, the receptionist, he looked at me and said, "Professor, where are you from?" I said, "I'm coming from New Jersey." He said, no. "Originally, where are you from?" I said, "I'm from Africa." I said, "What did you come to do in Las Vegas?" This is somebody we call a kami. We despise them. We say, they are kamis. He said, "What did you come to do in Las Vegas?" I said, "I'm a priest of the Krishna consciousness. I came to a conference to preach to professors." He said, "Okay, I'm satisfied with that." In other words, Las Vegas is not a place that a normal person should go. We are born into this culture, especially those of you who are born here in India. You are more than lucky, more than fortunate. So, don't abuse your fortune. Please, don't abuse your fortune. We came from military backgrounds, and we have come to embrace this culture. We know what we have derived from it. And you are born here into this culture. If you don't take advantage of this, again you will take another body. Who wants to take another body? Or you are thinking it's only sciences who go back to home, back to Godhead. It's only gurus who go back home, back to Godhead. Right there in Maharashtra, all of you have had the case of Tukaram. He went not just with the very body he was having here. That's in India. People don't even hear these stories outside of India. Because anybody can just displace a little bit of mystic power and then he becomes God. And even right in India, people are being cheated in the name of religion. In fact, the higher cheating in religion is going on in India. Because people don't read the Puranas. If you read the Vedic literature, you will never be cheated. But you refuse to read. And somebody will come and display some mystic CD and you abandon your faith. And you say he's God. And you follow him because he's going to give you some gold or some arches. He breaks some firewood and put them together. Put a match. Pour some kerosene. You will get arches. So you become God because you produce arches. Let us embrace what we have factually and in reality. You have the wealth. The wealth of the Indians cannot be expressed in words. It is because you have accumulated lots and lots of Krita Punya Punja. That's what Lord Brahma calls it. Accumulated heaps and heaps of pious credit. And so you have taken birth here. In fact, you were a failure. How is that? If you are a student, you didn't graduate, maybe just because of one core course, the professors, they won't graduate you. They will refer you. Those who take birth in India are people who tried to become perfected in a previous life. And small thing is there. It's like the student who made small error in that core course. And the professor says, well, this is a core course. You come back next academic session and finish this course. If someone fails a course, will he be proud? He'll be sober. But if he goes back to sit for that course, he will never joke. He will devour the whole thing and he will get A. What does God see? Because he was referred, he'll be angry. He will devour every bit of the text and he will get A+. This is not over exaggeration. I had a cousin who had a similar experience materially. He was in high school, and then one of the core courses he was supposed to pass to be able to get him to the university. He didn't make it, so he delayed him for that academic session to enter into the university. And he was so angry. He was so angry that when he went in this time, he just broke record that. Oh, I mean, nobody ever got that A+ in that course, the whole of their school. But because he was angry, he went angrily and then he just finished up everything. That is how those who have taken birth in India should be angry with themselves and just take this devotional service so seriously and finish up everything in this life and get out from this prison. What do you think about that? What do you think? You're going to be very serious this life?
Yes.
Say yes if you want to be serious.
Yes!
Haribo. So, this is my humble request to all of you. I feel enthused to be here. I don't want to waste your time. And I'm also a time-conscious guy. My time is already up. And perhaps there is one comment or question before I quit. Any concerns? Any comments? Any questions? Otherwise, in the absence of any other cup, anything else? Okay. Incidentally, he's one of the persons that I know very well in the midst here. Yes, so what's your question?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you for your highly inspiring talk and lecture. We're very enlivened to hear about your wonderful service of preaching in the academic world. My question is that what do you feel is the greatest challenge that you personally face and we as ISKCON devotees face in distributing this message of Krishna consciousness in academic circles? And how can we overcome this challenge?
The major obstacle that perhaps I would say is that I think a lot of, because like in ISKCON we have a body of ISKCON scholars called the VAST, Vaishnava Advanced Studies. And so those students who are doing like the doctoral program, who are dovetailing their secular intellectual abilities in preaching, well, they are members of that very group. And as scholars, we are faced with challenges of time in terms of utilizing time for scholarship. And at the same time, we have to be able to embark on serious sadhana, because without sadhana, you run bizarre, because it's you're dealing with the material energy, and you have to also integrate that with your sadhana, proper sadhana. If you don't have strong sadhana, it could be very difficult to preach in the academics. Those devotees who are here who are preaching in colleges, they know this, because you have to do things in advance, and you have to be able to perhaps wake up earlier than any other person to be able to prepare your programs. And so the challenge is in terms of time management and self-management. You have to manage your time properly and manage yourself properly. And that also applies in all fields of our devotional endeavor. Because even if you are a housewife, if you don't manage your time properly, if you don't manage yourself properly, if you waste your time just talking for japa, then you end up not doing the proper thing at the right time. So if you know what you have to do to be able to excel, then do it rightly and do it properly. And so, generally, it's that challenge of time management and self-management. And sometimes people who are not in academics, they don't understand. And they think that you're not being liberal enough, you're not giving people attention, you're not making yourself available. But, the guru will come. Look, I'll give you my own example, for instance. When I was moved to another temple several years back in Nigeria, and then I was giving my spiritual master reports about my preaching, like going to offices to meet people, to distribute books on the street, going out for Harinam. And my spiritual master, my Guru Maharaj, he sent a message to me. He sent a reply to me. He said, this report is very good about your preaching, but all the things you mentioned in your letter, any other devotee in ISKCON can do it. Go to the universities and preach to the professors. So it was a serious challenge. And even my godbrothers, everybody was just looking up to seeing what's he going to do. But I took that instruction to heart, so I started it. In fact, I'll tell you some funny story. Are you ready to hear it? I had my first 30 publications in academic journals without a first degree. When I got that instructions to go and preach to professors, I just started going. And I was thinking what to do. Then I started with presenting papers at academic conferences, and then writing for academic journals. And so even when it started it all and then it started improving, even my Guru Maharaj, I think at some point in time, he was very surprised. I remember when I was to go to the U.S. to do five conferences in six weeks. So when I spoke to him on the phone, I earlier sent him the details of the programs. And then when I spoke to him on the phone, he's in the U.S. I mean, he was in the U.S. And I sent the details to him. He knew what it is. So I remember he was asking me on the phone, Vasudev, how come? But how did you get to know about all these programs? So this basically, I told him, well, I'm mingling around with the scholars. And so I got to know everything they're doing, and my friends, they keep informing me. And even this one, I just make some selections. So the point here is that sometimes we get instruction and we think, I cannot do it. I don't have the potentials to do it. No willpower to do it. I don't have the resources to do it. But every instruction comes with an empowerment. We are not the doer. Sometimes we think in terms of I and mine. And Bhagavad Gita says it's all due to ahankar. The ahankar is the most difficult thing that is the most difficult element to pierce through, to get out from this material world. That ahankar also is affecting us. And we got affected by the most material nature. So I took those instructions as something that I had to be able to do to be able to please him. And then I started doing that. And he was very happy about, you know, that project. And that's why he told me, oh, just go and get a PhD. Because after when I had my first 30 publications, and then even the professors, they asked me to be a coordinator of a journal. Imagine, some priest in a Krishna temple, they asked him to be a coordinator of an academic journal. So, I mean, when he saw those things, he himself was surprised. But I was not surprised. I was simply being used by an instrument by him and Lord Krishna. You know what Krishna does? The little boy, that little boy obeys in threefold forms. I mean, he does amazing things. And you see his pastimes, there's nothing that is common with his pastimes. And so you could use anybody to be able to, you know, execute some type of project. So sometimes people think, oh, he does this, or because he has a master's. But then I need to also tell devotees that, look, I did this. The starting was, this was the situation. And so nowadays our devotees are becoming very, very independent in our movement. And that independence is actually bringing about disempowerment. Because if a devotee does not even follow instructions of the temple president, he does not follow instructions from the temple commander, he does not follow instructions from his departmental head, where is he going to get empowered? I started writing. When the temple president told me, we are mates, materially speaking, he told me, write a newsletter. I said, look, I'm not a writer. I don't know anything about writing. So he came the next day again, pressurizing me. But I subscribed to what he said because out of fear, I was thinking, if I don't do it, he has a managerial position, he's going to victimize me, so let me just follow that and do it. But it ended up that I became inclined in writing, and that's how these writing skills developed. What I'm saying is, we should have the mindset of having to be able to follow some authority. Following authority comes with empowerment. Take the case of Arjuna. Arjuna was thinking in terms of his own, you know, manipulations and his own prowess. But Krishna said, just be an instrument in my hand. We could be instrument in the hands of Krishna today, just like Arjuna was an instrument in the hands of Lord Krishna. And all of you could be instruments in the hands of Lord Krishna in spreading this mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You could be used as a powerful tool in making others come to the family of Lord Krishna. And when you do that, when you make yourself available, then you could be used and Krishna will be pleased with you. So Krishna wants us to be able to come to the platform where he will put small mark for us to get the credit to go back to Godhead. We can't say, because I'm very lucky to be born in India, and so I do whatever I like. Somebody was telling me, one devotee was telling me, I don't want to mention the place, but one of the holy dams, he questioned him, why are you eating fish? Oh, this fish, this is Ganga Prasad. Any other comment? We have to quit now. So thank you very much, everyone. And I hope that we meet again some other time when I come into India. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Jai Holiness Vasudev Swami Maharaj Ki.